Let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is now 1:02 p.m. on Monday, April 3rd, 2017. And before we begin, I want to thank Christy Blair, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Kyle Schramm from the Juno LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I also want to remind committee members and all those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Eastman, Representative Kopp, Representative Ledoux, and myself, Representative Klayman. I would note that my vice chair, Representative Fansler, is excused at the present time, but will join us hopefully soon after 1:30. We do have a quorum to do business. Our first order of business today is House Bill 172, Industrial Hemp Production Licenses, sponsored by Representative Drummond. This is the first hearing of the bill in the Judiciary Committee. It is my intention to hold the public hearing and move the bill today. Here to introduce the bill is a representative from Representative Drummond's office. And if you could come forward, place your name on the record, and begin your presentation. But before you do that, I will note that Representative Reinbold has also joined us. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chairman Klayman and members of the Judiciary Committee. My name is Patrick Fitzgerald, staff of Representative Harriet Drummond. I want to thank you for the opportunity to present House Bill 172, an act relating to classification of industrial hemp to a controlled substance, from a controlled substance to an agricultural crop. Starting from the beginning, Section 7606 of the 2014 Farm Bill designates the approval of industrial hemp to be grown through a pilot program to monitor the growth, cultivation, and marketing of industrial hemp. Over 30 states have taken advantage of the pilot program and have expanded both domestic and international markets. House Bill 172 would define industrial hemp under Alaska Statute 03.05.100, Section 5, as all parts and varieties of the plant Cannabis sativa L containing no more than 0.3% delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol. Setting hemp under this classification will move industrial hemp from a controlled substance from the Alcohol Marijuana Control Board to the Division of Agriculture with the Department of Natural Resources. One of the most common taboos of hemp are the many similarities it shares with marijuana. Marijuana is the flower from Cannabis sativa L that is used medically and recreationally because it produces a high concentration of delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol. Hemp under the classification HB 172 must have less than 0.03% of the delta-9 THC content. HB 172 classifies as industrial hemp as a crop with the Division of Agriculture, meaning it will be planted, cultivated, and harvested, much like how wheat or barley is processed. Hemp grown outdoors in large-scale crops will have very low THC concentration, which by HB 172 stipulates that THC concentration must be below 0.03%. Hemp has proved to perform well in Alaskan conditions and was grown successfully in the early 20th century. The toughness of hemp is also what serves as one of the large distinctions between itself and marijuana. Industrial hemp is grown for the stock, seed, roots, and cell fluid for industrial use. Passing HB 172 will incorporate industrial hemp as a crop in the state's economy, will expand local markets and multiple industries, create new job pool, and will spur new revenue for the state of Alaska.
And thank you. I would note that Representative Drummond has joined us. Representative Drummond, your staff has done the basic presentation. Did you want to add anything before we open up the public hearing?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for being late. I think now that we have legalized marijuana and that business is off the ground and getting to work, it's time to recognize that its sister product that does not have a psychoactive component and that has an enormous marketable value. And I know the farming community is anxious to get to work growing hemp, and I think that passage of this bill will enable a new industry actually to return to Alaska from a period of absence and recognize that it's a valuable product and our farmers want to produce it. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Drummond. I note there's a PowerPoint. Did you want to go through the PowerPoint? Or where are we on the PowerPoint that's up on the screen?
I did cover most of what the PowerPoint, the content of the PowerPoint in the opening remarks.
Is it just a single slide?
No. it's multiple slides, and it goes in. It just goes into more detail about the bill and the separation, the distinction between hemp and marijuana.
Is there anyone on the committee that wants to, a more detailed review of the PowerPoint, or are we okay just on the presentation so far? I'm not seeing any hands getting raised. I would recognize that Representative Christ Tompkins has also joined us. Representative Ledoux.
So I just have a question here. It's not that I want the PowerPoint. So, I mean, I guess that hemp has been illegal, but I don't understand how I buy all of these creams that have hemp in them. I mean, where are they coming from, and why am I allowed to get those if hemp is illegal?
Patrick Fitzgerald, through the chair, to Representative Ledoux. Most commonly, those products are produced outside of the state and imported into Alaska through the same pilot program. I know Kentucky is one of the states that have taken the most advantage of this through the pilot program designated in 7606 of the Farm Bill. A lot of those products are coming from other states or imported from Canada, which is also a large hemp producer.
Just follow up?
Follow up, Representative Ledoux.
You mean we allow it in? We allow people to import it here, but we don't allow our own farmers to grow it?
No, because the Farm Bill designates each state must allow the pilot program to take place before they would be able to produce and cultivate it, which is...
Does the Farm Bill require that states allow hemp in from other states?
Not necessarily. It's not specified.
So, in other words, we've kind of decided somehow or other that we're allowing other people's hemp in, but not our own hemp?
Well, because hemp is still classified as a controlled substance under the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Board, we haven't had the opportunity to produce it and cultivate it as an industrial crop.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. I don't see any other questions from the committee, so at this point I'm going to go ahead and open the public testimony for House Bill 172. And I already see on the list there's a Steve Albers. Mr. Albers, can you hear us?
Yes, this is Steve Albers in Kenai, Alaska.
All right, Mr. Albers, if you will state your name again, and we limit public testimony to 3 minutes per person, so if you want to go ahead and state your name and any affiliation you may have, and then you can proceed.
Hello, Chairman. This is Steve Albers. I work with the Kenai Soil and Water Board here locally in Kenai. I wanted to express an interest in the growing of industrial hemp. I feel the advantages far outweigh any limitations to it. In my research in this last week, what I have found is not only does it include industrial commercial, but it also helps the individual homeowner that could grow this crop for their own uses. The one item I can come up with is poultry litter and cat litter, of all things. The potential for it for fodder for our agricultural community, I think, is quite large. Of course, the research is still rolling in daily. The uses of it, I'm emphatically for. So I'm glad that everyone that's here is listening, that has valuable feedback, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Next, I have. Actually, I'll note for the committee, there are several people online available for questions. Rob Carter from the Division of Agriculture, Arthas Keyes from the Division of Agriculture, Aaron McConnell, who's the Alcohol Marijuana Control Board from Anchorage, is available for questions. And Courtney Moran, an attorney with industrial hemp law down in Oregon, is also available for questions. On the line, I should have George Pierce from Kosilap. Mr. Pierce, can you hear us?
Yes, sir, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
We can, if you will just state your name and any affiliation you may have, or if you're just representing yourself, and if you can then proceed with your testimony. We ask you wind up in 3 minutes.
Thank you for taking my testimony. My name is George Pierce. I live in Kosilap, Alaska, and I'm representing myself and many of the Alaskans. you know, we're in a process now where we need some revenue, and this is an excellent source of revenue. I hope you got a pencil there so you can write this down. It's called the Information Distillery. Look that up and go to the many uses of hemp. That will show you what this product does. It's a great product. It's one of the most useful plants on earth. I got a whole list of things you can look at and read this. For thousands of years, humans have been using this hemp plant for food, textiles, paper, fabric, fuel oil. Today, modern process and technology have made it possible to create alternatives to gasoline, plastic, and other petroleum products. You know, it'll save our trees. Food and nutrition. It's highly nutritious and delicious. Hemp is the only plant that contains all of the essential fatty acids and amino acids required by the human body. Now this product, and if you read this, and it's well worth your while, it's nothing like marijuana. Nothing. You don't smoke it, you don't get high. It helps you. It's good for clothing. It's good for animals. The Constitution, the flag was made out of hemp. The Constitution was written on paper from hemp. It's an $80 billion worldwide industry. The only thing I want you to do is pass this bill and let the Alaskans invest in this and make it to where the Alaskans only can create this industry. We're not stupid. It's a weed. I know we can grow weeds without having outside interest and non-residents coming up here to exploit our money and our resources. This is a great revenue potential that we can do right here. And please educate yourself. It's not like marijuana that's recreational and you get high on. It has too many other characteristics and valuable health for humans and for animals and for us. So please pass this bill and make it so only Alaskans can invest in this resource. Thanks for taking my testimony and good luck.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pierce. Are any of the folks that are online to answer questions, is there anything that any of you wanted to add to what we've heard from public testimony so far? I don't see any questions. Representative Reinbold.
I don't have for any public testimony. I just have for people who are online or the sponsor of the bill. So okay. It's your preference.
You have some questions.
I do. If whoever wants, I guess, through the chair, just get a little bit more detail into what exactly Section 3, if you can explain, you know, go through more.
Actually, Representative Reinbold, we will get to that stuff.
Oh, okay.
What I'm trying to do is get through public testimony, but I had listed four people that are in the line for questions, and if they wanted to add something different than questions, I was going to give them an opportunity, but I didn't hear anything.
Fair enough. That's what I was trying to figure out.
But we'll get to questions, but I want to get through public testimony. I next see listed for testimony, I think joined after the first time I looked through, Steve St. Clair from Wasilla. Mr. St. Clair, can you hear us?
Yes, sir. Can you hear?
We can. If you want to state your name and any affiliation you may have, and you can proceed with your testimony.
Yes, sir. My name is Steve St. Clair. I live in the Mat-Su, and I am representing myself. Bottom line up front is I oppose this bill for a myriad of reasons, but with 3 minutes, I don't have a lot of time. The government does not need to be involved in the growing of a weed. Where is it mandated that the government needs to monitor this resource? Additionally, your previous caller said the Constitution was written on hemp paper. No, it was not. A draft might have been. It's the same rabbit hole that Shelley Hughes went down that was incorrect, Senator Shelley Hughes. I've done research on hemp. Colorado legalized it in 2014, and it cost the state the first year $272,000, and it has not been self-sustaining since. They had seed money, and it's still not self-sustaining. Washington, and I have sources for this, and I will send it to the committee if requested. Washington, I spoke to their program coordinator. They're allocating $145,000 for the start of the program and hiring one employee. Kentucky, who has been doing this for Colorado. Colorado's been doing it for 3 years. They now have to increase their fees because it's not self-sustaining. Kentucky, which is started in 2014, they have done the same thing that we are planning on doing, zero allocated. Department of Agriculture absorbs the costs and personnel. Well, in 2 years that they've been doing it, they had to hire two or three full-time employees. The none of these programs are self-sustaining. And when Division of Agriculture and DNR says that they have the personnel and resources to absorb the inspections and regulations, well, they haven't been cut enough then. You got too many people with too much free time. Their budget needs to be cut, and if I look correctly at HB 57, which is a different topic here, they're being cut by $2 million this year, Division of Agriculture in itself. This is not a self-sustaining program. This is a money pit. We don't need government involved in this, and please tell me if I'm getting close on my time. I went over once and got in trouble for it, and I don't want to do it again.
You got about 45 seconds, and I'm usually a little soft on giving you a termination notice.
Well, I was a little rude on it the last time, so they weren't real happy with what I said. But the bottom line is this is not fiscally sustaining. It's going to turn into a government welfare where the government is subsidizing this program for an industry that may only be used to feed cattle or whatever, because they're saying 25 people are interested, but I'd like to actually see how many are going to pay the registration fees once those fees come up. Thank you for your time, and I'm ready to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Representative Ledoux has a question, Mr. St. Clair.
So, Mr. St. Clair, do you have a problem with the legalization of hemp other than that you're concerned that the government might initiate a program to help the hemp farmers? I mean, if it were just the saying to the people who wanted to do it, hey, go ahead, you can farm this weed, do you have any problems with that?
No, ma'am, none whatsoever. It's not on the legalization of it, it's the government involvement in it.
All right, thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much. I don't see it. Oh, Representative Reinbold has a question, Mr. St. Cloud. Don't go anywhere yet.
Hey, Steve, thank you for doing your research. I'm really thankful that you did. If you wouldn't mind forwarding the information from the Colorado, Washington, and I believe you said Kentucky, to the chairman, and then hopefully the chairman will distribute it to us. That would be very helpful and very informative. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Question.
Representative Eastman has a question, too. So you're not off the hook, Mr. St. Clair. You're well past your 3 minutes, but it doesn't matter when you have to answer questions.
Yes, Mr. McClair. Hopefully not a difficult question, though. Thank you very much for the information you provided. I was just curious. I know it probably took you some time to compile all that information. How current were each of your stats from those other states?
Well, I actually called the states I have on my research. I have points of contact, and they're relevant within the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Thank you.
Now I don't see any other questions. I see there's an Abby St. Clair, but doesn't seem to want to testify, and I'm just assuming that's you all are connected, but she's not here to testify. She's just listening.
Yeah, she's kind of here to keep me in line, make sure I don't go off the rail.
Well, we can say that you've, it appears that she has done a very good job. I do see that Courtney Moran wants to testify. Ms. Moran, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, my name is Courtney Moran, and I am an industrial hemp attorney with my firm, Earth Law LLC. I am available for any questions, but I'm also testifying today in support of House Bill 172. It has been my honor and pleasure to work with Representative Drummond's office, Patrick Fitzgerald, and the Division of Agriculture in drafting legislation that complies with federal law and also sets up a regulatory framework that will provide for a successful and sustainable industrial hemp program for farmers and manufacturers throughout Alaska. First, I wanted to follow up from the question asked earlier about industrial hemp products. Industrial hemp products themselves are legal and always have been. That was clarified in the Ninth Circuit in 2004 in the HA versus DEA case. It's the cultivation of industrial hemp that has been at issue federally, which is why you're able to see industrial hemp products on store shelves today. It's just that, as Patrick mentioned, most of these products are imported from around the world. Section 7606 of the Agricultural Act of 2014, Congress not only defined industrial hemp, notwithstanding the Controlled Substances Act, but also gave authority for state departments of agriculture and institutions of higher education in states that have legalized industrial hemp to research the growth, cultivation, and marketing of industrial hemp. So this is what provides the clear federal authority for the implementation of state programs. And in fact, 15 states actually cultivated hemp in 2016. And House Bill 172 will create that state legal authority for Alaska farmers, which upon passage and implementation will allow Alaska consumers to purchase domestically produced hemp rather than imported hemp. House Bill 172 defines industrial hemp in compliance with the definition provided by Congress in the Agricultural Act of 2014 and removes industrial hemp from the definition of marijuana, which is what is provided for in Section 3. Most importantly, House Bill 172 clarifies that industrial hemp is an agricultural product and subject to regulation and registration by the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Agriculture. Authority is established for the department or institution of higher education to administer an agricultural pilot program, and rulemaking authority is established for the department to implement that program, as well as they are given authority to establish annual reviewable fees for the application, registration, and renewal of application fees to pay for the regulatory costs associated with regulating and implementing the industrial hemp program. So the budget concerns that were outlined by that gentleman that just testified can be cured by this authority for the department to...
Can you hear us?
Or violation notices to those producing industrial hemp without a current registration. So this will again ensure that anyone cultivating is registered and paying into the program. Another important provision of House Bill 172 is that it provides that food is not adulterated solely because it contains industrial hemp, which will alleviate any issues as the program is developing. So I hope this committee provides a unanimous due pass motion for House Bill 172, and I thank you for your support and encouragement for agricultural industrial hemp development in Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't see anyone else on the screen that wants to testify. Is there anyone in the room that wants to testify with regard to House Bill 172? Did you have a question for one of the people that testified?
I did. Yeah, the last lady.
Oh, well, she's going to stick around to be available for questions, so I'm going to go ahead. I don't see or hear anyone else that wants to testify, so I'm going to close the public hearing, and then we're going to open it up for questions from the committee. And Representative Reinbold, I know you have questions.
I certainly do, and I don't remember the woman's name that just testified. She's a lawyer.
That's going to be Courtney Moran. Ms. Moran, Representative Reinbold has a question for you.
Ms. Brown, can you please explain what the current federal law is in regards to marijuana and hemp?
Sure, yes. Marijuana, there's a
definition. If you can state your name for the record when you start answering questions, just because it makes it much easier for the secretary to know who's talking.
Yes, no problem. This is Courtney.
And the public, too. The recording secretary gets me straight as well.
Okay. Again, this is Courtney Moran. Federally, marijuana is defined under the Controlled Substances Act as any part of the plant cannabis sativa and goes into specific details of what that does and does not entail. However, in 2014, in the Agricultural Act of 2014, or what's more commonly known as the Federal Farm Bill, Congress included Section 7606, which not only defines industrial hemp as any part of the plant cannabis sativa with not more than 0.3% THC concentration, but establishes authority for state departments of agriculture and institutions of higher education in states that have already legalized industrial hemp, the authority to establish agricultural pilot programs to research the cultivation, growth, and marketing of industrial hemp. So that is the clear authority from Congress for a bill such as this to be implemented in a state. And, I mean, there's almost 30 states that have legalized industrial hemp, and at least 15 of them are currently cultivating.
Follow-up, Representative Reinbold? Are there any other questions for folks online or for the bill sponsor or her staff? Representative Ledoux.
So what would be the problem if you just legalize this thing? I mean, why does it have to have, and I'm not quite sure how I'm asking this to, why does it have to have a pilot program? I mean, do we have programs, for example, for wheat or for alfalfa or for barley? I mean, if people want to grow hemp, why don't we just let them grow hemp?
Well, we'll start with the bill sponsor, and if you want a lifeline, you can call from somebody online.
Yes, this is Patrick Fitzgerald through the chair. I'll touch on that, and then if Mrs. Moran would like to clarify, she can clarify anything. What I believe it is, just going back to why it's not cultivated, is because it's just defined as a controlled substance. It's specifically a crop. And the pilot program just initiates the allowance of the study of if it yields positive revenue, like the cultivation, how kind of the whole process works.
But if the feds are allowing us to say people can grow it, why do we have to study it? So in other words, if we just passed everything in this bill other than the provision for the pilot program and just says that it's legal now, and then if people can make money out of it, fine. If they can't make money off it, then they stop growing it. Or do we have to do something saying that it's a pilot program in order for the feds to give us authorization? Is this section 03, 05, 079, is that necessary? Are the feds requiring us to put this section into it, rather than allowing us to simply say, okay, hemp farmers, you know, go to it?
I'll reference Mrs. Moran.
Again.
This is Patrick Fitzgerald through the chair. I'd reference Mrs. Moran on that, please.
Ms. Moran, are you available to answer Representative Ledoux's question?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Again, this is Courtney Moran, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For strict compliance with the provisions provided in Section 7606, the federal government does require the implementation of a pilot program to study the growth, cultivation, or marketing of industrial hemp. Now, several states have gone beyond that and established full legalization programs for full commercial cultivation. In Colorado, that is being done with the option to be a research participant or just engage in commercial cultivation. So, I mean, if the state wants to go for full commercial cultivation, they definitely can do that. But to comply with Section 7606 of the Agricultural Act, this section of the legislation should be maintained.
Representative Ledoux, follow-up.
Well, so if we go with full commercialization or full legalization of it, can we forget the study? I mean, what I'd like to see is us just saying, okay, if you can make money growing hemp, great. If you can't make money growing hemp, you know, then grow something else instead. I'm just not sure why we have to study this thing. And so what I'm asking you is, could we just say, hemp farmers, you can grow it, or do we have to have this section in it? And if we have this section in it, do we really have to study it? Or can it just say this is a pilot program for people to grow hemp, forgetting about the studies?
Ms. Moran?
Yeah, again, this is Courtney Moran, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The Congress has not defined specifically what is and is not required for research, so the department could require as much or as little information and research as they would feel comfortable with in implementing a program. In regards to sales, marketing of industrial hemp is included in research, and that is how many of the folks are engaging in making sales with their products through market research.
Follow-up?
But it has to be the government doing the market research? Is that what I'm hearing?
Again, this is Courtney Moran, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. No, it does not have to be the government doing the research. The farmers that are registered with the department themselves can be doing the research, and if the department would like, they could be requiring farmers to just turn in that research, similar to what's being done in Kentucky.
So in Kentucky, through the chair, the farmers do the research and then they send the info to the state?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, they do. There are universities in Kentucky that are also engaged actively in the research programs, but in Kentucky, the farmers are required to submit a research plan. Those that have viable plans are selected and given licenses, and then they are able to cultivate and conduct those research studies throughout that production season.
So, again, through the chair, and then I'm going to see so what's the least thing that the government can do in order to allow the legalization of hemp, but without the government doing anything? What is the least that we could do in order to meet the federal requirements and still not be making a hemp farmer do anything more than a barley farmer and agricultural administrator not doing anything more than they would do to administer barley?
Ms. Moran.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, again, this is Courtney Moran. This bill is exactly that. It creates, you know, registration authority for the department, which is required in the Farm Bill. It sets up the establishment of an agricultural pilot program. We establish rulemaking authority for the department so they can establish how much research that they are going to require the farmers to engage in without any additional overly burdensome regulations.
So this is the absolute minimum, is what I'm hearing.
Yes. Ms. Moran.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes.
Thank you.
And just for clarification before I go on to Representative Christ-Tompkins, you described two or three states that you described, I think, as having a more robust hemp production program than the pilot program. Did those states have a pilot program before they went on to the more robust structure? Ms. Moran?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, this is Courtney Moran. No, they did not. So some states have just implemented full commercial programs. Whether or not they're compliant with federal law is up for debate. And with the new administration, I would recommend establishing legislation that is compliant with the Farm Bill and still allows the farmers to, you know, engage in a program that's going to be sustainable long term. And if in the future we need to change a few words so that it's no longer a pilot program and it is a full program, that's something that we can definitely do.
Okay. Representative Christ-Tompkins had a question.
Thank you. And I think my questions are probably for Ms. Moran as well, but perhaps the Division of Agriculture team. First of all, compliments to the sponsor, staff, and sponsor for the bill. I'm really excited about it, as well as the presentation. Who are the three or four states that have gone full bore commercial production bypassing the pilot program phase? Ms. Moran.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Colorado and Oregon, I would say, are the two leading states that have done that.
Follow-up?
Representative Christ-Tompkins, follow-up.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Moran. And could you speak to the, the gross revenue of industrial hemp in the various states that are pursuing hemp agriculture, both states that have pilot programs and Colorado and Oregon?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, can you clarify your question? Are you looking for specific figures? Or can you just clarify what you're looking for?
Representative Christ-Tompkins. Actually, before he does that, I'll just note that Representative Fansler has joined us. Go ahead, Representative Christ-Tompkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Moran, or really anyone at the Division of Agriculture, the answer is yes. I'm looking for specific figures or sort of an order of magnitude to get a sense of the sort of economic scope and scale of the nascent industry as it exists in these various states. And the reason I ask this is I'm interested in what the economic potential in Alaska is, or at least sort of getting an appreciation for what is done already and what the sort of upward limits might be for Alaska. So I guess I would ask you, Ms. Moran, and perhaps if you don't have numbers or orders of magnitude at your fingertips. Maybe the question is for Director Keyes at the Division of Agriculture.
Ms. Moran, can you answer that question?
This is Courtney Moran, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I don't have specific figures for you. I can tell you that the amount of cultivation has increased significantly in each state. In Oregon, in our first production season in 2015, we only had 9 farmers that actually cultivated, 11 who had licenses due to several different issues with getting our program up and running. During the 2016 production season, we had 77 farmers cultivate, and already for 2017, we have 118 farmers registered with our State Department of Agriculture. This is really going to be our first, or 2015 was really our first successful production season, and so our first products are being produced and first sales are being made right now, so I don't have those figures for Oregon. I'm sure you could easily reach out to the Colorado Department of Agriculture to get some specific figures out of Colorado, and possibly a member with the Division of Agriculture has that information.
Perhaps with the permission of the chair, the same question for the Division of Agriculture, if they're familiar with sort of gross revenue figures from...
We can certainly ask that, but before we go to Division of Agriculture, I got a note from other members of the committee. Ms. Moran, if you could tell us a little bit more about your organization, which I have listed as Industrial Hemp Law, but that was a little unclear about what the group is. If you could just tell us a little more about your group, and then we'll get the same question answered from the Division of Agriculture. Ms. Moran?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am an industrial hemp attorney with my law firm, Earth Law LLC. I am a registered lobbyist in Oregon for the Oregon Industrial Hemp Farmers Association, and I've just been advocating nationally and internationally for industrial hemp law reform.
So essentially your client as a registered lobbyist and working for your law firm is the Industrial Hemp Growers of Oregon. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not being paid to work on this legislation. I'm just doing it because I want to provide an opportunity for Alaska farmers and just return to all U.S. farmers the right to freely cultivate industrial hemp that they once had before 1937.
Okay. Representative Ledoux, I think, has a follow-up question on that specific topic.
Me too.
So in Oregon, have they... I think I heard you say they've actually gone to just legalizing the whole shebang.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, this is Courtney Moran. In Oregon, we have full legalization of cannabis, similar to Alaska, except for industrial hemp. We legalized medical marijuana back in 1998. We actually legalized industrial hemp in 2009, well before the Agricultural Act of 2014 was put into place, and legalized recreational cannabis in 2014. Last year, in 2016, I did lobby on behalf of the Oregon Industrial Hemp Farmers Association, and we passed House Bill 4060, which revitalized our industrial hemp program and set up the program that has been sustainable and successful for the farmers today. And we are currently working on specific legislation to provide some additional tweaks to our program, including providing specific language calling our program an agricultural research pilot program and giving additional regulatory authority over to our Department of Agriculture.
Just one follow-up.
So
in Oregon, do you have people, I mean, is the government actually studying the growth, cultivation, and marketing of industrial hemp, or is it just letting people, you know, go off on their own and grow industrial hemp?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, this is Courtney Moran. Currently, farmers are the ones that are doing research on their own. The government is not requiring or doing their own research. In our new legislation that's currently going through and before our legislature, it will provide authority for the department to require additional record keeping and research to be done by the farmers, as well as engaging at least Oregon State University, if not other universities, to engage in research with our registered farmers.
Just one more follow-up, I'm sorry. And you keep using the word that your farmers are the ones who are researching the growth. And I mean, I would imagine most farmers would say they're just growing this stuff. Are you using the terms research in conjunction with what the farmers are doing in order to try to keep in compliance with the Farm Law Act of whatever year it is? I mean, are the farmers basically in Oregon just growing it?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, this is Courtney Moran. Actually, no, everyone is doing research. I mean, this crop has been cultivated for over 12,000 years, and the history of the U.S. cultivating industrial hemp is rich. We have not cultivated this plant for the past 80 years. Farmers are learning what they had to learn over again. So, I mean, farmers are looking at what type of irrigation am I using, how much fertilizer am I using, what is my plant spacing, what type of varieties am I using, what kind of inputs do I have to put into my soil? So no matter what anyone is doing, it truly is research at this state.
And are they reporting all...
What I'm able to do is setting a record for follow-ups on one...
Are they reporting all of this to the government, or are they just doing it?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, both. Some of them are, are PhDs, and they're doing their own research and submitting it to the government. Some are keeping their own records. Both is the answer.
Thank you.
Representative Christ-Tompkins, I think we wanted to follow up on your question with one of the representatives from the Division of Agriculture, Mr. Carter or Mr. Keyes, if you remember Representative Christ-Tompkins' question, you can answer it, or I can have him restate the question.
If you could, this is Keyes from the Division of Agriculture, if you could repeat that question.
Go ahead, Representative Christ-Tompkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Keyes, my question was, do you have a sense of the sort of gross revenue from hemp agriculture or industrial hemp production in other states, whether Colorado or Oregon, which have gone for the more full-bore, fully-fledged approach, or other states that have pilot programs, and sort of in a ballpark or order of magnitude sense, how large this emerging agricultural sector is in these other states?
Through the chair, Representative Christ-Tompkins. So an actual...
If you'll restate your name just for the record.
This is Arthur Keyes, Director of Agriculture. Through the chair, Representative Christ-Tompkins. So actual dollar numbers, I don't think we're that far yet to say what the values are in these other states. At least I haven't heard anything. I can say that I did attend the hemp regulatory meeting in Colorado last year, and Kentucky was a big presenter down there. And some of the numbers that they put out in 2015, they had 1,742 acres in hemp production. In 2016, that number jumped to 4,600 acres of hemp production. They also stated that they imported 60,000 pounds of hemp seeds from 9 different countries for these farm activities using hemp. That being said, 4,600 acres is a pretty significant amount of acreage, and I would imagine that there's an economic benefit that's pretty significant in order for this kind of growth to happen.
One last follow-up?
Representative Christ-Tompkins, follow-up.
Thank you. I guess sort of a request to either the division or to the sponsors would be to track down sort of economic data for how large these sectors are in other states to maybe give us a sense of what the upside potential is in Alaska. And my last question for, I think, the Division of Agriculture team is maybe speaking a little bit more, I noted the material in the PowerPoint, but speaking a little bit more to the climatic advantages or disadvantages Alaska farmers will have in cultivating industrial hemp.
Through the chair, Representative Tompkins, can I say something to that?
Yeah, we were hoping you would. You just need to identify yourself so we know who's talking.
Again, this is Arthur Keyes, Director of Agriculture. I think the point of the pilot program, I think, in Alaska is to find out what we can do. And saying, do we have climatic advantage or disadvantages? I think those are questions that we just can't answer until we're allowed to grow it, until the farmers are allowed to find out if there is an advantage or even a disadvantage. So some of those things would be things that we would answer or hope to answer after the opportunity had been had been there to actually learn what we could do. And if I may, I believe Rob Carter's on the line, and he is a state plant agronomist, and he may have something to add to this.
Mr. Carter, did you have anything to add to Mr. Key's question about the question related to climate? You could remind me of the question, Representative Christ.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, the question was whether Alaska will have any climatic advantages or disadvantages, sort of our northern latitude, and given how well hemp may grow in other areas, basically how well suited or positioned we are given our relative climate to be successful or unsuccessful in growing industrial hemp.
Mr. Carter.
Yes, sir. Through the chair, Representative, this is Rob Carter, manager of the Plant Materials Center in Palmer, for the record. Considering Alaska having a climate advantage is kind of a two-edged sword. We're a rather large state, so the difference between the Southeast Panhandle and north of the Alaska Range is pretty dramatic. I would say from general agronomics, Alaska has the potential to utilize industrial hemp for a multitude of reasons, even outside the beyonds of just harvesting it as a traditional agricultural crop. There's a lot of research in bioremediation that could be used as far north when the intent might not be to harvest a crop, but to improve soils, from research in Sweden showing now that it's reducing cadmiums in soil levels in some of their regions. There could be seed production in Southeast used for CBDs. The research that was done in 1916 and then again in the 50s, really, that we believe showed that it did produce well in the Fairbanks region. That in itself, with the things that have changed in our climate, our longer growing seasons, and then modern technology should give us a pretty significant advantage. And then the nice part that Alaska provides us is isolation. We really are remote from other large macro agricultural production, including cannabis production, which may make us and give us the opportunity to be a relatively clean seed source for these low THC industrial hemp seeds.
All right. Next. Mr. Did you have something to add from the bill sponsor?
Yes, just real quick, Patrick Fitzgerald, through the chair to the committee. There's a news clip in your bill packets from the Alaska Agricultural Experiment Stations of 1916, which it states that hemp has had a very successful history of growing here. And basically, I could just read it. A small plant of a four-drill rose seed, May 21st, began to bloom June 30th and was harvested September 14th. The best plants were 40 inches tall. The poorest were 12 inches tall. The plants fruited abundantly, about 75% of the crop ripening. So hemp has had some success growing in Alaska in the past.
Thank you. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To go back to the first testifier for a moment, I have a further question.
This is for Mr. Albers. Mr. Albers, are you still on the line?
Well, not necessarily. So I meant the previous testifier.
You mean Mr. Carter from Division of Agriculture?
Before that.
Mr. Keyes from the Division
of
Agriculture.
No, I'm looking for a lady on the list.
Ms. Moran from the attorney that's with the industrial hemp growers in Oregon.
Yes, unfortunately I don't have her name in front
of me. She doesn't represent them. She's just here on her own behalf. Okay.
Correct. Mrs. Moran, could you tell me, is there any legal significance to the words pilot program in the current legislation before us or in the federal legislation you referred to?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, this is Courtney Moran. The language comes directly from Section 7606 of the Agricultural Act, and that's what we're reflecting in these sections in this provision.
Follow-up?
Representative Eastman, follow-up.
And is there a definition of what pilot program means? If I were to do anything and call it a pilot program, is there anything to say that I'm not doing a pilot program?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, agricultural pilot program is defined in Section 7606 as agricultural pilot program means a pilot program to study the growth, cultivation, or marketing of industrial hemp, subsection A, in states that permit the growth or cultivation of industrial hemp under the laws of the state, and sub B, in a manner that sub I ensures that only institutions of higher education and state departments of agriculture are used to grow or cultivate industrial hemp. Sub 2 requires that sites used for growing or cultivating industrial hemp in a state be certified by and registered with the State Department of Agriculture. And sub 3 authorizes State Departments of Agriculture to promulgate regulations to carry out the pilot program in states in accordance with the purposes of this section.
A follow-up?
Representative Eastman, follow-up.
Thank you. Ms. Moran, now, all of that simply spells new program to me. Whether it's a pilot or otherwise, I look at that as synonymous with creating a new hemp agricultural program. Is there any legal difference between what we're doing in this bill now and what you've described as a more aggressive, you know, full program that's been pursued in Colorado, for example? So what is that distinction?
Ms. Moran.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes. Thank you. That's an excellent question. The language in House Bill 172 is directly compliant with the definition provided for agricultural pilot program in the Farm Bill, in that, you know, we set up the language for the pilot program to study growth, cultivation, and marketing of industrial hemp. It's regulated by the State Department of Agriculture, State Division of Agriculture, and the sites are certified and registered by the State Department of Agriculture. So this is providing, you know, direct compliance with Section 7606. If you look at the statements that have come out from DEA since this enactment, they are looking specifically for research to be done in compliance with 7606, not necessarily general commercial cultivation in a commercial program. So that would be the difference.
That's all. Thank you.
Representative Reinbold, you're next in the queue with questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So first of all, I would like to talk to Courtney, if she's still on the line. And just out of curiosity, this committee likes to know costs and have costs posted. So if you're comfortable, it'd be interesting. If you're uncomfortable, don't say, but how much lobbyists do get paid in Oregon, I believe you said. That would probably be my first question. We have to post lobbyist fees here in Alaska.
Representative Reinbold, I guess the question, she testified that she was not testifying on behalf of the group that she does some lobbying work for.
I understand that. I know that very clearly, okay. But that wasn't my question. My question is, in Oregon, how much is she paid to lobby for the hemp industry?
Ms. Moran, can you let us know, at least in 2016, the last year, we're not asking for this year, but how much you earned, how much you were paid by the hemp industry to work as a lobbyist?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, everything in Oregon is public record. You can check our Government Ethics Committee for the commission for the specific figures. I was paid just over $5,000 to do this. I do this. This is my passion. I believe in industrial hemp. It can do incredible things for our environment and for our public health and for our general economy, and I'm doing this because it's the right thing to do. And again, I'm not getting paid by anyone in Alaska to do this. I'm just doing it because I believe in it.
But just to make sure we understand, at least in 2016, what you got paid by the industrial hemp growers in Oregon was $5,000 for the whole year?
Just over $5,000, yes.
Okay.
Can I continue?
Follow-up, Representative Reinbold.
Thank you for that. That was just more curiosity than anything, because we just did a posting of fees bill, and also our lobbyists have to disclose how much they're paid here, so it sounds like you do the same thing there. Anyway, in regards to growing hemp, do you believe it's the state's business to know, like, how much fertilizer they use and all that, or is that more proprietary information, or is it because they're getting any type of subsidies from the government, that the government wants that type of information?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, this is Courtney Moran. the industrial hemp industry is not subsidized at all. And the information is beneficial to the industry as a whole. You know, in the industrial hemp industry that I have seen develop over these years is very collaborative and communicative, and everyone wants to work together. We're trying to return, you know, to farmers, right, that they once had a long time ago, and provide a renewable, sustainable crop for everyone. And so this information is really just to help the industry get off the ground and to truly establish best practices.
Can I continue, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. Okay, so have there been any negative impacts that you are aware of with the hemp industry? I know it's kind of like someone who is gung-ho on something they may not want to disclose, but I want to also know the positive. What have you seen some of the benefits in Oregon? But I would like to know the negatives as well.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't see specific negatives other than that we are really trying to develop an industry here, and it's, you know, step by step, every step of the way. So, I mean, we're working on getting seed and genetics so that our farmers can get plants into the ground, and as they get plants into the ground, we're working on developing proper harvesting techniques, and once we have that taken care of, we're developing processing facilities and the infrastructure to actually establish these products and, you know, really have a program and an industry here. So, I mean, that's been the biggest hurdle that we've been facing, is just, you know, really getting the whole industry off of the ground. But it's been incredible because I've seen, you know, new farmers learning about a new crop, folks that have wanted to grow a crop, coming and actually being able to fulfill that dream and grow those crops, providing rotation for other crops that they are growing. There are phytoremediation studies being conducted, which means the ability of a plant to clean up toxins in soil. So, I mean, I just see a lot of potential as we are actually able to develop the industry.
Can I ask one more question?
And also seeing a lot of people come.
She's not done.
And engage with local government. That's been really incredible. I mean, working with different state agencies, working with our county governments, actually going to the state house and working with our legislators, meeting with the governor's office. So, I mean, really just people getting involved with our legal system.
Follow-up, Representative Reinbold.
Right now, this is the last question, but I know we...
I told you to that, you know.
Right now. I said right now. So in 5 minutes, I could have a different one. But anyway, okay, so in Alaska, we legalized marijuana, and I think that they were saying that we were going to get $5 million a year. And I think we've only collected around 472,000. I'm not sure right now today, but that's the last article I saw. So I guess what I'm wondering is hemp taxed at all in Oregon? And if so, do you have any idea how much has gone into the state coffers?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is Courtney Moran. Hemp is not taxed in our state.
All right, Representative Ledoux.
So I'm just curious, and this is a question for Mr. Keyes. Is Mr. Keyes still there?
Should be.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Would it be, and I guess it's twofold. First of all, would it be your intention as you're the Director of Agriculture, correct? To allow anybody who wanted to grow hemp, would you allow them to get a registration?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, our intent, I think, was to develop a pilot program, and I think initially when we first started going down this path, I mean, I think we envisioned not that many growers, and basically, you know, the initial program being a learning process, and you know, we weren't anticipating that many people. As this has developed momentum, we've been contacted by so many people that I think we would end up having to limit the may very well having to limit the number of growers because we didn't anticipate putting, you know, we don't anticipate hiring new staff. We basically anticipated creating a very simple program to learn how this crop grows, and you know, agronomic principles. So, yeah, I guess the answer to your question is, I think where we're at now is we would probably not even limit it.
Follow-up.
So, I guess I'd kind of like to see the greatest number of people being allowed to participate in this program and the least amount of work that your department would do. I mean, I get it that maybe one needs to have this pilot program language in here in order to perhaps comply with federal law, but I'd like to see you kind of minimally comply, I mean, comply with it, but don't go over whatever you have to do, but let the most amount of people grow the stuff. And so I guess the question was, what exactly, I mean, this is sort of broad, but what exactly were you thinking about doing?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, this is Director Arthur Keyes. I think initially we anticipated a very simple program to get this off the ground. One of the challenges that the farmers, even if the state makes this, were to make this crop legal, one of the challenges that the farmers are going to face is the seed, trying to get seed. It's a Schedule I drug, classified as a Schedule I drug. So the only way to get seed to grow this is going to be the Division of Agriculture. That's probably going to be the biggest involvement we would have is the Plant Material Center would be in charge of procuring and importing the seeds. It would be illegal for a farmer to import seed into Alaska to grow hemp. So it would require the Division of Agriculture to get that seed, and then with a very absolute minimal amount of paperwork, register the farmers and provide them with the seed to grow this crop. That's what we anticipated, and that's still where we're at. You know, if it gets more complicated, then things change. As it gets more complicated, the more difficult it will be for us to do this.
Follow-up, Representative Ledoux.
I guess two follow-ups. Follow-up number one is, if it's just providing seed, why can't you let everybody who wants to do it do it?
Mr. Keyes.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, this is Director Arthur Keyes. I would actually like Ron Carter to speak to this. He's the one that's really worked on this pilot program, if he's still online.
Mr. Carter, are you still with us?
Yes, Chair.
Go ahead, Mr. Carter.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ledoux, I believe that if you, and this is my belief and a lot of work in seeing what's happening around the states, what's happening in Canada with their large-scale production that's been happening since about 1998, I think if you went on the basis of a very simple pilot program as a registration process, and then the division itself being the sole source of seed, if that's how things fell through, it could be a very simple process that may have unlimited membership. The thing to this that a few others have testified and said is that, you know, to provide the opportunity to grow industrial hemp and then to have sustainable industry in the state of Alaska, you know, we really want to follow those federal guidelines. We want to make sure that if in some day we have 100 or 10,000 acres in production, that the farmers have an opportunity to be able to sell their product. We want the opportunity to be able to use what we can here in Alaska and export the rest. I really believe that following those true guidelines that have been set for us in the Farm Bill and another act here recently in reference to the transportation of across state lines, trying to have a pilot program that follows those guidelines that these other states have already set forth, which may be a little more onerous than just a simple registration and here's your seed, but in the long run will provide the sustainability and integrity to our industrial hemp program or industry in the state of Alaska.
Thank you. And then just one more follow-up question.
Sure, Representative Ledoux.
I guess I'm somewhat surprised that it's so difficult to get the seed, because I had understood that you could actually go to various websites and get marijuana seed, which I didn't really understand how you could do that, but people tell me that you can. So that if you can get marijuana seeds on the websites, I'm surprised you can't get industrial hemp seeds.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, you are correct.
If you could identify yourself one more time for the record. We don't know who you are.
Bob Carter from the Division of Ag. My apologies.
It's Carter.
Chair Representative
Rob Carter.
Ledoux, you are correct. You can purchase cannabis seeds on the Internet, and you can purchase cannabis seeds that have been deemed inviable. That's what you consume in your protein product, in your hemp meal, in your hemp seed that's in your granola bar. But when you look at industrial hemp production over, you know, the buying a couple seeds that are shipped in illegally to boot because they're cannabis seeds, we're not looking for three seeds. If you look at the agronomics or the principles behind the agronomy of growing industrial hemp, we're looking for a million point two live seeds per acre. This isn't going to be what can show up in a pen or a ball cap as a novelty. This is going to be a semi-truckload bowl.
All right, thank you.
I don't see any other questions from members of the committee. And I would just... Representative Eastman, go ahead. This is questions or comments? We will get to comments, too.
Follow up for the last speaker. You know, I've ordered some pretty large purchases online in my time. Is there any reason I couldn't order a semi-truck full of seeds?
Through the chair, Representative, yes. Currently, the DEA would shut that down very quickly. And most industrial hemp seed farmers around the states or within Canada are pretty selective on what they do. They work very hard to follow federal guidelines to make sure that their business model is sound. And I guarantee you, if you called Oregon and said, please send me a semi-truck of industrial hemp seeds that I'm growing, they more than likely would say, you know, I'm not willing to risk my business to help you out. You're going to need an official DEA, I believe the form is a 225, where it has to be inspected, and then it has to know that it's going to a state or crossing state lines that would have a legal pilot program in place. I have heard, I did not witness, that in Kentucky, during the implementation of their first program, proper forms were not in place, and the DEA seized their first semi-truck of seed shipment.
Thank you.
I would just, this is kind of a comment and maybe a question as well for Mr. Carter. At some level, what I'm hearing that there's an effort on the Department of Agriculture, if this bill passes, is to get just a large enough program to bring in the seeds that only the state can bring in legally under the federal restrictions, and that's why the pilot program becomes important for the state to be able to bring in the seeds. Trying to find the right number of seeds to bring in so that it doesn't become this massive warehouse here in Alaska with five or six truckloads of seed, but no one wants them. And then we have a bunch of seeds knowing growing hemp, but to get enough of people interested that we can bring in enough seeds to see if this works, but not so many that we're overly invested in something that may or may not work, and trying to find that right balance is kind of what the pilot program is trying to do, under the recognition that we as a state are have budget challenges and we can't exactly go spend buy tens of thousands of truckloads of hemp seeds. Have I got that right, or am I missing something?
Chair, you have that correct. I think that knowing that this program is going to be a little bit of time in the implementation with some drafting of some regulations, identifying seed sources, getting some best management practices set in place for Alaska's agricultural industry, we're going to know the intent of how many folks and how many acres are going to be produced. And by no means is the state looking to become the hemp seed storehouse for the state of Alaska. We want to make sure that if seed comes to Alaska in a viable form, that it's getting planted in the ground through a registrant of the program.
Representative Reinbold, did I see you with a follow-up question?
Yes.
Go ahead.
So this is to Rob.
Mr. Carter.
Mr. Carter. Basically, I just want to know, is the government subsidizing where you are, your agriculture, in any way? And are the farmers actually making money growing this?
Could you please repeat your question in regards to making, this is Rob Carter, excuse me, making money in regards to growing industrial hemp or in the other agricultural product we assist with industries around the state?
I would actually prefer that you only ask questions with regard to hemp because we're
that's all I'm asking about. Yeah, I know, absolutely. It was 100% hemp. That's the only thing I care about right now before us, what's before us. Is there any government subsidies where you are with this hemp, and are the farmers making money that you know of? Is it a fruitful for them or no?
Mr. Carter?
Through the chair, Representative Rangel. Well, I'm actually in Palmer, and so I don't directly work with any industrial grower in hemp growers in the state of Alaska because at this time it is not legal. Through my counterparts in Kentucky, in Colorado, and Oregon that I've spoken with, there has been revenue generated. I know that if you look at the numbers that are out there, Colorado is about the biggest with about 8,900 acres in production last year. Those farmers that produced that were very successful and had a pretty good generation of revenue on their farm and back into the community with the production of oils from those crops.
Can I do the last question?
Sure, Representative Reinbold, follow up.
Okay, so let's just go back in history just a little bit. Why is marijuana and hemp illegal, was illegal in this state in particular? What are the biggest concerns? Why has it taken us this long to get to the hemp production? I mean, is there any type of unintended consequences, or why was it why was there such a barrier?
And do you know who that's a question to?
Rob.
Rob, if you can answer the question, go ahead, Mr. Carter.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, to the best of my knowledge, you know, hemp, industrial hemp, cannabis, recreational side, I'm not going to even discuss. It's outlined for multiple reasons, legal in the state of Alaska because of its psychoactive effect. But industrial hemp, you know, it was federally outlawed in 1932. The real reason behind that, there's a bunch of stories out there. It was very successful in building rope and cordage and sails for our servicemen in the war. And to the best of the knowledge and the research that I can find is that it was strictly it was a business decision. It was an easy one to single out because it's guilty by association, being in the same genus and species as the recreational marijuana. And to me, it seems it was a business decision. It was more preferred. Farmers like to produce it in cotton. Hemp was a competitor, and it was easy to call it out of the system.
Okay, one more.
Representative Rangel, follow-up.
Okay, and this question I think is important. Marijuana, they couldn't use federal banks like federal credit unions or anything when there's any sale of marijuana because of the federal banking. Are those regulations, do they cover hemp as well?
Mr. Carter.
Through the chair, Representative Rangel, to the best of my knowledge, no. Once the state of Alaska deems this an agricultural crop, and because the following those strict federal guidelines, with having a pilot program and the producers being registrants, there should be no difference in growing this than potatoes, barley, or wheat.
All right. I don't see any further questions or comments from the committee in terms of questions. As I noted earlier, it's my intention to move the bill today. Are there any further comments or discussion from the committee about the bill? Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With my bringing my fishing background and public safety background, Representative Reinbold asked a good question, which is, well, why is this association troubling? And it was a good question. But I think if we had a school of agriculture in Alaska like they do in the middle Midwest, probably 80% of our questions wouldn't have even been asked. Because hemp, and I'm sure Ken Carter can verify this, was a major part of our industrial revolution, a major part of it. And the only reason why it later, like he said, stopped was because it had this, it was guilty by association due to its troubling cousin, marijuana. But I think looking at the bill, 0.3% THC, it has to be regulated and tested. In Alaska, we're doing 10% THC, 35 times more. There are more than five strains of marijuana now that are over 20% THC, which is 70 times more. So this is not, it's not even the same thing. You don't get high off this. But I think to put it in perspective, if you ever go into a Bed Bath & Beyond, it's one of my wife's favorite stores, there's probably only two aisles full of shampoos, bath gels, cosmetics, and lotions of hemp-based products. And as a mariner, I can tell you that nearly every single ship's hawser rope is a hemp rope. And we, you know, that's just common. The marine industry, that's what we use. That's what works. I know Levi jeans, that's all they made Levi's out of was hemp when they first started. So I think we can get wrapped around the axle because of the Hemp Marijuana Association, but they are entirely different. This is not a drug bill. And the problem is we have federal regulation we have to carefully navigate to make this a viable product. And I think really what we should be looking at is if we have an industry that wants to do this, if we have farmers that want to do it, then it'll be successful. But you know what? Right now we have twine, nets, ropes, and all kinds of cosmetics made out of it. So I just want to say I do think it's a good bill. I'm glad it's being brought forward. I don't like to see the federal government telling us too much what we can grow or not. And if this is now something we can do, look forward to seeing it happen. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further comments from the committee? Representative Ledoux.
I would like to insert on page 2, line 3, after the word year, and shall not be limited in number. And I wanted to get the maker of the bill's view on whether she would consider that a friendly amendment.
This is on page, just to make sure we're tracking, page 2, line 3.
Yes, section D. So it would read, registration under this section is valid for 1 year and shall not be limited in number or limited in number of registrants.
Will not be limited. Yes, shall not be limited.
Representative Drummond.
I don't have a problem with that, Representative Ledoux. This is Representative Drummond, the sponsor of the bill. Just other than I think we need to let the Division of Agriculture be certain they can handle the number. I think they said initially they would be limiting the number of registrants to make sure that there is a fee structure in place that can handle the work, that covers the work so that the government is not subsidizing this industry yet it's paying its own way. I imagine that's how they would that's how they would begin. They would collect fees and order enough seed based on the fees and the acreage intended to be planted so that the first crop can get off the ground. And then I think after that, I think we need to let the Division of Agriculture decide how many they would want to license. But I think initially they need to proceed carefully so they don't, like you said, they don't have to order a semi-tractor trailers worth of seed and not be able to begin.
Representative, will do follow-up.
Yeah, but it's not a problem for the Department of Agriculture to order a semi-trailer. It would be a problem for Representative Reinbold or Representative Eastman or I to order a tractor. But they could order a semi, and hopefully they could simply charge whatever the registrants, whatever it's going to cost, in order to order the semi-tractor, because I don't like to see the government choose winners and losers, and, you know, if somebody wants to do this, let them do it.
Representative Ledoux, Representative Drummond through the chair, I don't have a problem with inserting that kind of language, because the bill already doesn't limit the number of registrants, and The next paragraph after the one that you wish to amend, it says the department shall establish
fee levels.
Fee levels. so that the total amount of fees under this section approximately equals the regulatory costs for regulating the industry. So I'm good with that.
Okay, thank you. So can that be, are we at a point in the committee meeting where one could make a conceptual amendment?
I think we can, yes, we can certainly take on a conceptual amendment.
Okay, I move conceptual amendment number one, which adds on page 2, line 3, after the first sentence, year, and shall not be limited in number of registrants.
And I can object, right?
You can object for purposes of discussion. Go ahead, Representative Reinbold.
Can you explain why you want to do that?
Representative Ledoux.
Because I want to see that anybody who wants to grow hemp has an equal shot at growing hemp, and so that the government's not involved in deciding who can grow it and who can't grow it.
Representative Reinbold.
So right now you're saying that the government is going to be able to pick and choose? Is that an accurate statement? Who can and who can't? Because I don't think that's an issue as it is right now.
Can I respond to that?
Yes, you may.
I think that the concern is some of the folks in the Department of Agriculture had said that maybe at the beginning the number of registrations would be limited. And it was my feeling that we shouldn't limit the number of registrations because that would put the government in the position of choosing winners and losers. So I've added that to the bill so that that couldn't happen, which I actually thought was the note you wrote to me.
Oh. Representative Reinbold, we're not going to inquire about the notes you've been passing.
Please don't.
But if you could you could respond.
It might be another little episode of embarrassment, humble pie. Anyway.
Why not have humble pie?
Please don't talk about it. Anyway, could Rob please speak to this?
Mr. Carter, you've been hearing the exchange. Can you respond to the kind of comment? I guess it's not really a response, but if you could provide comments. And go ahead, Mr. Carter.
I've actually had discussions with the director here during this testimony and you guys' discussions. And, you know, if we look forward to building the regulatory process, that pilot program, it's not our intent to limit who can produce this. We want to make sure that, you know, we can cover the work so we can, you know, help grow this industry and give everyone equal opportunity. But if it's a seed source and a registration simple process, there's no undue intent by the division to say, hey, you can and you won't. If you're an applicant, you filed your application within the deadline that will be set forward because we will have a registration process and you can pay the state back for the seed at costs that we paid for it, including everything. We won't limit these people.
Representative Reinbold, any follow-up?
So, Mr. Carter, do you see this as duplicative and unnecessary?
As to the amendment offered by Representative Ledoux, Mr. Carter.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I think with the discussions in the beginning, thinking that this may have been a pretty regulatory requirement besides a simple registration process that we have the intent to, I think that that's where that comment came from, saying, oh, well, if we're going to have to really regulate this hard, we may have to limit that. We have had a lot of acquisitions in the coming weeks or the previous weeks over how many people. And so I do think that at this point, changing the language is really pointless. I think that the intent of the division in general is to support Alaskan agricultural industries and this just being a new one.
Follow-up, Representative Reinbold.
And mystery solved. That even though Representative Eastman and I both have messy handwriting, that note came from Representative Eastman, not from me. Therefore, I don't think this amendment is necessary, so I'm not going to be supporting it.
Well, all I can say is I'm not going to try to analyze anyone's handwriting. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, to the committee. I will work on making my handwriting very distinct so there's no question in the future. But I think that the amendment can do no harm. I think it's great to have it out there to the public that this isn't another example of government bureaucracy, you know, limiting things to regulations unnecessarily. I think the desire of the committee and hopefully the rest of the legislature is that this industry get off the ground just as quickly as it may. And certainly, just because, you know, someone got their application in, you know, 5 minutes before the next person doesn't mean that they should, you know, be able to partake in this industry and the next person shouldn't just because of a shortage of paperwork. Thank you.
Representative Reinbold, based on your comments, I assume you're maintaining your objection to conceptual amendment number one. Is there any other further comment on conceptual amendment number one? Hearing and seeing none, I will ask the clerk to call the roll on conceptual amendment number one.
Okay.
Got to be careful. You get too carried away with what we're doing and you lose track of everything.
Okay. Representative Reinbold.
No.
Nay. Representative Kopp. Oop. Representative Christ Tompkins.
Yay.
Yay. Representative Ledoux.
Yes.
Yes. Yay. Representative Fansler.
Yes.
Yay. Representative Eastman.
Yes.
Yay. Representative Kopp.
Conceptual amendment number one.
That's good.
It reads, and shall not be limited in number of registrants on line 3, page 2.
Yay.
Yay. Chair Klayman.
Yay.
Yay. So 6 yays, 1 nay.
All right. Are there that amendment number, conceptual amendment number one passes by a vote of 6-1. Are there any other conceptual amendments? Hearing and seeing none, are there any final comments from members of the committee on House Bill 172 as amended? Representative Reinbold.
Yes, so probably 30 minutes ago, I wanted to go ask just if you guys could just explain anything in Section 3 or Section 5 about food. It's something about adulterated or something food that can this be added to different food and not be considered adulterated?
You want to go back to questions and not final comments?
We never. Yeah, I tried to ask this 30 minutes ago.
Oh,
and you wouldn't let me.
No, I kept asking if there were more questions, and you didn't seem to have any.
To me.
No. I didn't. I thought I was trying to give you every opportunity. Okay, let's go back to Section 3 and Section 5. And you want to ask Rob Carter or someone else?
I would like to ask the bill sponsors, Mr. Chairman.
Bill sponsors. Representative Drummond or representative from your office.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Drummond through the chair. I was just reminded a few minutes ago that I have bought several times bags of hemp seeds to add to my cereal or to use with any food product from Costco. Mm-hmm. And I bet you it's available right up the street right now. So it's an accepted food product as a grain, as a healthy grain. You heard one of the testifiers say earlier that it contains many types of important nutrients, and I think they said all of the essential fatty acids that a grain can be providing.
Representative Reinbold, follow
up. Okay. So I guess what my question is, I haven't studied the impacts of hemp. I know I've seen lotions and all and clothing and all that kind of stuff, but food is a little bit different. And so what's your intention of not making it adulterated food? Did it used to have to say that if it had added hemp, then it was adulterated, and now it's not? I just don't know the history, because this is even in the title. It's kind of a big deal.
Patrick Fitzgerald through the chair to Representative Reinbold. This is just saying specifically that included with the separation of industrial hemp fitting the 0.03% THC mark from marijuana, it is specified that it just does not contaminate food that goes with animal feed, livestock feed, anything that was used in granola bars, anything like that. It's just making that specific distinction.
Representative Reinbold.
And I guess where my concern is, I don't know hardly anything about this product, and I don't know if there's allergies, I don't know if there's, you know, any impacts to people or anything like that. I know we've had some pro-testimony, but that doesn't necessarily satisfy, you know, my curiosity, because when people digest stuff, it's a lot bigger deal. So are you just, is the purpose just to not even them have to do a disclaimer that there's hemp seed in food? Is that basically, like, genetically modified, you know how Garantar got all on to genetically modified, she wanted everything labeled. Is your intention just that it's just like any other grain to just be included? Is that what you're saying in the bill?
Yes.
What
I'm, Patrick Fitzgerald through the chair. Representative Reinbold, yes. That it would be included with such as any oats, grains, things like that. That would be the idea of the person who was cultivating it.
Follow up.
Yeah. This to me is kind of an important issue. So is this the same in the other states that have legalized this? Do you know? I mean, have there been any type of medical or any other reports or anything in regards to this? Or is this just kind of standard practice? It's just once it's legalized, then it just can go and they can put it basically in any food they want.
Patrick Fitzgerald, through the chair. As far as other states go, I'd like to give that question to Mrs. Courtney Moran if she's still online.
Ms. Moran, are you still with us? And I don't. And just a note, I don't think this exempts them from listing the ingredient in the food. They just.
Oh, I understand that.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Ms. Moran, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, this is Courtney Moran. Yes, in Oregon last year, we specifically put similar language in, clarifying that industrial hemp is, or food is not adulterated specifically because it contains industrial hemp. Similar legislation is being put forward in Colorado right now as well. A lot of this is being prompted because there were issues in Colorado with foods being called adulterated just because there is industrial hemp in there. Industrial hemp, grain, I mean, industrial hemp has been consumed for thousands of years. There's incredible nutritional value. There's plenty of research out there that shows this. Canada is the largest exporter of industrial hemp grain in the world, and the U.S. is the largest importer of those products. We see industrial hemp food products on store shelves everywhere, so it really should not be of concern, this clause.
Follow-up, Representative Reinbold.
Okay, so there's no known allergies or interactions with food or known effects to hemp or any hemp products. Is that correct?
Ms. Moran.
Members of the committee, not that I'm aware of.
Any other questions, Representative Reinbold? All right, we are back to comments. Any further comments on the bill as amended? Hearing and seeing no other comments, you're a co-sponsor of the bill. I figured you had nothing more to say.
Well, gosh, I mean, I want to talk about the good things of the bill. But in any case, yes, I am proud to be a co-sponsor. And, you know, if I were to consider an amendment, which I'm not at this point, but I think the only thing I might add to it is simply that, you know, by virtue of us, you know, starting this pilot program, you know, we're not in any way, you know, giving away the rights our state has to deal with agriculture in the way that, you know, we deem fit. And just because the DEA has been dragging its heels on this for, oh, I guess about the time the DEA was started, this is, you know, I think probably the most classic special interest example in U.S. history. You have one industry, the cotton industry, and their allies who have deprived the United States and every Alaskan of being able to do very reasonable, economic, you know, freedom-loving American things with this product. I think this is a fine time that we reverse that trend. And I hope that, you know, we don't take this pilot project and make it a study in bureaucracy, because governments tend to want to do that. I think we already know how bureaucracy works. We know that those who are opposed to industry can use bureaucracy against it and against the best interest of the public. So let's not do that. And you know, for my own part, I look at every agricultural exercise as a study, whether you call it a study or not. You know, you're trying to figure out the way to grow something, and your results are proof of whether or not your study was, you know, what you intended or not. Whether you have a degree or whether or not you're tied to a university is really beside the point. So I hope that this project will spread wings and fly and do great things for Alaskans. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Price Tompkins.
Thank you. I want to associate myself with the comments of Representative Eastman and Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Representative Christ Tompkins. Hearing no other comments, may I have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move version 30-LS0707-A of House Bill 172 with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
I'd note that is as amended by the conceptual amendment. Hearing and seeing no objections, House Bill 172 moves from committee. That brings us to our final order of business today, which is House Bill 43, New Drugs for the Terminally Ill, sponsored by Representative Gren. And I'd note, stick around to make sure you sign the paper as it comes around on House Bill 172. And so we're on House Bill 43, Representative Gren. This is the second hearing of the bill in the Judiciary Committee. At this time, I would like to move on to the amendments. Hard copies of amendments were dropped by committee members' offices. Please let us know if you need an extra copy. And as a reminder for members, the maker of the amendment will make a motion. If no one objects, the amendment passes. If there's an objection, then we'll speak to the amendment. And if the objection is maintained, the amendment will be put to a vote. Representative Eastman, I have a motion for amendment number one.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number one.
Object.
There's an objection for purposes of discussion. Representative Eastman, if you could speak to amendment number one.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This comes from conversations I've had with the bill sponsor, and we're both supportive of having this language added to the bill. Just for sake of clarity, to make sure that there's no confusion about how this bill will be used in the future.
And I see you have a representative from the bill sponsor's office. Is just for clarity, what is the bill sponsor's position as to amendment number one?
For the record, Brooke Ivey, staff to Representative Jason Gren. And just to note that Representative Gren apologizes for not being able to make it. He is currently in House Finance Committee. Mr. Chair, the bill sponsor is in agreement with this, can be supportive of this amendment, and thanks the sponsor for bringing it forward, just to make sure the intent of the bill is clear. Thank you.
Representative Reinbold.
I think it's a great amendment. I absolutely support it. Thank you.
Any other further comment as to amendment number one? Is the objection to amendment number one maintained?
I will remove my objection. Thank you.
So without objection, amendment number one is adopted. Now we will move on to amendment number two. Representative Fansler, if I could have a motion for amendment number two.
I move amendment number two.
And I will object for purposes of discussion. Representative Fansler, if you can explain amendment number two.
Yes, absolutely. This is something that was worked out once again with the bill sponsor. It is a amendment that will allow folks to use these experimental drugs that have followed phase three but have not quite yet been approved. So it just extends our ability to use these drugs, and I will pass over to Ms. Ivey if she has any comments on that.
Ms. Ivey, as by behalf of the bill sponsor, did you want to add anything more with respect to amendment number two?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to explain further if needed by committee members or if they have questions, but this time the sponsor is in support of this amendment. This is a friendly amendment. Thank you.
Representative Eastman, questions with regard to amendment number two?
Oh, just a comment to the maker of the amendment. Good job.
All right. Is the objection to I'm going to remove my objection to amendment number two. Is there any other objection? Any other amendments to the bill, or any other objections to amendment two? Hearing and seeing none, and I don't see any other amendments to House Bill 43. That brings House Bill 43. Did I say that amendment number two is adopted? Or do I need to say that?
Okay. I didn't say it, but I'll fix it.
You got it.
Yeah.
Amendment number two is adopted. That brings House Bill 43 back before the committee. Is there any further discussion from members of the committee as to House Bill 43? Representative Eastman.
I just wanted to let, for the record, I intend to support this bill, and I am very glad that the sponsor brought it forward, and I think it can only do good things for Alaskans.
Representative Reinbold.
I would like, Mr. Chairman, to ask the sponsor of the bill to respond to Primera. Primera had, and they wanted to add a new section, Section 5, because they fear that maybe there's a sparkly new product that might cost, you know, $100,000, and they don't, they wanted this amendment so that they didn't, the patient didn't necessarily demand it, and Blue Cross had to pick it up. That's my understanding. If you could please just speak to Primera's concern on adding a new Section 5 to the bill.
Representative Reinbold, through the chair, yes, of course.
State your name, please.
Oh, excuse me, Brooke Ivy.
We know who you are, but the record doesn't.
Staff to Representative Gren, for the record. So the Section 5, as suggested by Primera, would essentially just codify that that an insurer or a patient's health care insurance plan would not be responsible for covering the costs of an investigational drug or the effects that may occur from the use of that investigational drug. Currently, that is not a requirement under state or federal statute. So at this time, it's not something that we necessarily oppose, but it may be somewhat redundant.
Representative Reinbold.
Brooke, do you believe that this could create conflict between the patient and the insurance company if the insurance company, you know, denies or the patient wants it? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out the future, if we're setting unrealistic expectations or if you already believe that this is not part of state law so that the company can but is not required to provide this product for the patient under insurance coverage.
Representative Reinbold, through the chair, for the record, Brooke Ivy, staff to Representative Gren. In speaking with Primera, which the sponsor did, our understanding is that, you know, their intention was to create clarifying language in the statute so that it was repeated there, but my understanding is also that per FDA guidelines, informed consent, as is referenced in the bill, so written informed consent form, that conversation will happen between the doctor and the patient at that time regarding coverage or lack of coverage, and that will be part of that process where they are aware of what they're getting into, essentially.
Follow-up, Representative Reinbold.
Okay, so to me that's one thing between the patient and the doctor, but I'm speaking between the patient and the insurance company. So is it what's the intention of the bill sponsor that this mandate that Primera or insurance companies pick up the cost for these experimental drugs or just to leave it as an option?
Representative Reinbold, through the chair, I'm afraid I won't necessarily be able to speak to what would happen between an individual and their insurance company in that conversation, but the understanding that we have an intent is not to require an insurance company to cover the investigational drugs at this time. Thus, it's not referenced in the bill. We didn't broaden the scope into the insurance section of statute for that reason, as we realize that doesn't solve everyone's problem who's trying to access this medication, but we felt that we weren't ready to take on that level or require that an insurance company cover an unapproved drug, which isn't currently required under law.
Okay, and through the chair.
Go ahead, Representative Reinbold.
So you're allowing the opportunity and the option. That's the intention of the bill.
Representative Reinbold, through the chair, that's correct. It would really be under the purview of the insurance company and that individual's health care plan as to what was covered.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Any other comments with respect to the bill? And that appears to be all the final comments. Representative Fenzer, may I have a motion?
Certainly. I move version 30-LS0207-D of House Bill 43 as amended with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Hearing and seeing no objections, House Bill 43 moves from committee. I would note that it appears we made a slight error in signing the paperwork and we sent first around the paperwork on House Bill 43. So if the way you signed House Bill 43, thinking that was 172, if it's different, let us know and we'll fix it. But if it's the same, then And then we know that Representative Christ Tompkins didn't participate in this discussion, so we will take his name off. So House Bill, I'm getting everything confused. House Bill 43 will move, and the paperwork is on its way. We will adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, April 5th at 1 p.m. On Wednesday, we'll hear public testimony on House Bill 79, Omnibus Workers' Compensation, which is sponsored by the House Rules Committee by request of the governor. If anyone is considering an amendment to House Bill 79, and I do know that there's a couple of amendments that have been requested by the governor's office, please let my office know and submit any amendments to House Bill 79 by 5 p.m. tomorrow, Tuesday. And with that, we will stand adjourned. It is now 2:46 p.m.